If you're like most people, you're pretty tired at this point. We've given you a lot of material and a lot to learn, so it's okay to take a break. But first, you probably have some questions. In particular, you probably think that this technique can work, but that it's way too long and complex for a cold call. So if you have just a little more energy, we'd like to address that one question before you take a break. Well, it may seem like a lot to do just to get an appointment. It isn't necessarily so, nor is it necessarily complicated. The reality is that you won't need to use every tool in your toolkit for every call, but you do need to have the whole toolkit available. Second, it turns out once you get good at this, and it does take a little bit of practice, the calls will go pretty quickly. More importantly, if the prospect is really interested, they're going to want to talk for quite a while. So why shouldn't a call like this take 20 or 30 minutes? And that be a good thing. Third, all you're doing is asking questions. It's the prospect who's actually doing all the work. As long as you can take good notes, sit back and enjoy the show. You may not believe this today, but it's almost a miracle of modern science. If you ask it, they will answer and answer and answer. Of course, the days of $20 or $30 per hour are over, but so are the days of getting only one good lead per day, if that. So let's look at the implications of this approach for productivity. Assuming you had a goal of making, say, $20 an hour, this is never going to work. But now recall what we said earlier, that you shouldn't set goals for dial rate, that you should set goals for revenue, funnel, and the quality of the leads. So right off the bat, we're on a different page if you're concerned about your dial rate. Instead, let's talk about how long a good conversation takes. If you're like most cold callers, you know exactly what we mean by a good conversation and how long it takes. So let's say it takes 15 minutes. Is it realistically possible to have 20 of these 15-minute calls per hour? Of course not, since 15 times 20 is 300 minutes, which is 5 hours, not 1 hour. Now do you see why we don't set goals for dial rate? Our question to you, though, is if you could have a good conversation like this on every call, wouldn't you want to? Of course you would. So what's holding you back? An inability to get past gatekeepers and voicemail, an inability to engage with a prospect, a misguided objective for dial rate? Let's at least agree that focusing on dial rate is a distraction and that call quality is what matters most. And if this method results in better quality calls and more appointments, then it doesn't really matter what the dial rate is. Another question is whether we're biting off more than we can chew. For some products, maybe. But if you're going to sell somebody on granting you an appointment, you must demonstrate to the prospect that it's worth their time. If you can't, then you're not going to get the number or quality of appointments that you need, or eventually the sales that you want. And finding out what somebody considers to be worth their time sometimes takes asking more than a few questions, and it certainly takes more than a show and tell. The problem is also that meeting ultimately has to be her idea. If you just tell her that she should meet with you in order to learn more about how your product can help with problems that she hasn't told you she has, your appointment rate will be much lower and your percentage of no-shows is going to be much higher. With this method, however, you should be able to get an appointment with almost anyone who's qualified and virtually all of them should show up. That's also why one of the first questions we ask is, what are some of your goals and challenges in this area? Isn't that easier to ask than to guess? And it's why we ask a question like, if we could solve that problem for you, what would that enable you to do that you couldn't do before? Isn't that more enlightening to you and more motivating to them than you telling them what you think you can do for them? Of course it is. So the real challenge is that getting someone to agree to meet often requires you to ask multiple questions, often as many, if not more, than it might take to persuade them to buy. This is partly because getting someone to give up some of their time is often far harder than getting them to give up some of their money, especially if it's not their money. But it's also because by the time they're thinking about buying, after a call like this, they're already interested. So there's simply less ground to cover in the sales cycle. And that's why generating a good lead is actually the heavy lifting of sales. A cold call like this isn't biting off more than you can chew. It's giving the prospect the respect she deserves. Experience has shown that a call opening built around a strong, compelling initial benefit statement, ideally with an embedded metric, is the most effective way to grab the prospect's initial interest and attention and get them to be willing to talk to you. Once the prospect has agreed to have a dialogue with you, then asking good questions designed to uncover needs, pains, problems, and unmet goals, and their costs and consequences, both to herself and those who have a stake in her job performance, as well as the benefits of solving them, both for her and the beneficiaries of her work, is the best way to justify a meeting, or at least getting the prospect to take a concrete step to move the process forward. Remember that practice makes perfect, so write out your prerequisites and your script elements, your EVC models, and your call notes. Customize your questions on the call flow diagram for your specific business and role play with a partner. Then hit the phones. Take good notes and celebrate your success. We're now done with the main part of the course, and so if all your questions have been answered, you can now hit the phones, knowing that you have the ultimate weapon in your marketing arsenal. That said, I strongly suspect that there are a couple of issues that you need us to address, such as sending information, following up, getting past gatekeepers, and dealing with voicemail. So if you want to hang around after class, we're going to cover them now. Although it isn't directly part of learning how to make a good cold call, at some point in the lead generation process, particularly if you stimulate some interest, your prospect may ask you to send them some information, and you may not be able to refuse to provide it. Obviously, as you now know, if they ask you to send them information, it's an indication of failure. It means you've not covered enough needs or built enough of a perception of benefits, and it especially means you're not in control of the call. So the first thing you need to do after they ask you to send them something is look in the mirror and ask yourself how you got into this situation. This is because the measure of progress is the concrete step in the absence of an appointment. Remember, they need to do the work, not you, and so you need to go back over your script elements, your opening, your IBS, and especially the questions you ask, and don't let it happen again. If you're still on the phone when this happens and you have a chance to salvage the call, use it as an alert, a notification that you're off track, and view it as a statement needing a rebuttal. Therefore, you should checkpoint it, regain permission to ask questions, and then ask a question that gets you back into the call, such as, I'd be happy to send you some information on what we have, but before we do, would it be okay if I asked you just a couple of quick questions? If they agree, you're back on track. If not, then you're stuck having to do all the work, and you'll have to fix the process later. So if that happens, what matters is that you should send them as little as possible, since whatever you send them is likely to unsell the deal, particularly if it talks about your products or features. Your best shot is to send them case histories or application descriptions, or maybe even an EVC model. This is because the more they know about your product in the absence of them coming to terms with their needs for it, the less likely they are to grant you the appointment or even eventually buy. In any event, making the best out of a bad situation, your cover note should use something like the following format. I'd like to thank you very much for your time today and for your interest in how our company can help you solve this problem and that problem and this other problem while delivering this benefit, that benefit, and this other benefit. As we discussed, you appear to be having issues with and then restate their needs, pains, problems, and unmet goals, or significant problems that you would like to address. And the costs associated with these challenges are growing each month due to, and now restate, the urgency factor. As you indicated, if you don't do something about it, there will be these other downstream consequences. On the other hand, if you had a solution, it would enable you to gain this benefit, that benefit, and this other benefit. It would also enable you to benefit other people in these following ways. In order to best enable you to overcome the challenges we discussed and take advantage of the benefits we discussed, you mentioned that you would like to be able to, and now talk about your concrete step while I do my next step, and we would get back together in whatever time frame to see what we need to do next to put you in a position to overcome these problems and gain the benefits we discussed. In the meantime, if you have any questions, please feel free to call me at any time. Thanks again, and I look forward to speaking with you on such and such a date. Sign it and send it. Now, if you've been paying attention, you probably noticed the problem here. Specifically, this idealized cover note recapped the problems and benefits uncovered in our hypothetical call. But since the call was a failure in that it failed to uncover needs and benefits, how is it possible to include them? Good question. You can't. The best at this point you can do is guess. That is, if you're going to send a cover note to a prospect where you haven't yet identified needs, you need to make some up and word them propositionally. Of course, here's another use of your case histories, needs analysis, application descriptions, and EVCs. But as the saying goes, if you can't dazzle them with brilliance, baffle them with, well, you know the saying. Lard it on, make it as relevant as you can, considering those things that you have been able to uncover, and hope for the best. Just don't send them some standard cover note. It's guaranteed to get round filed. One of the biggest problems with respect to appointment setting and cold calling is no-shows. This is where you set an appointment with a prospect and they don't show up. Maybe when the rep calls them, they didn't have it on their calendar, or they forgot, or they deny having made the appointment in the first place. This can be an embarrassment to the caller, the rep, and the prospect when it happens, and so it's important to understand why it happens and how to prevent it. but it's also important to understand that it is very unlikely to happen if you followed the methodology we've been discussing for the past few hours. Specifically, if by asking good questions you've uncovered real, actionable needs, if you've built real value, and if you got the prospect to take some concrete step, it is extremely unlikely that they're going to no-show. After all, if she thinks that taking the next step in the process is going to make her a hero around the office, if she thinks it's going to put more money in her pocket, and if she thinks it's going to make her life better or get her promoted, why wouldn't she show up? By the same token, if she just thinks she's going to learn something about a solution whose value is completely opaque, if she thinks she has something better to do with her time, such as thumb through emails in case there's something more important in it, or if she simply hasn't fixed the value in her head, why would she show up? The first thing you do to prevent no-shows, therefore, is run the original call correctly, which means establish rapport and credibility, uncover needs and problems, build value, create urgency, and get the prospect to do their concrete step and tell you lots of reasons why she ought to do this. The second thing you need to do is send a cover note when you send your calendar link, just like the one we discussed previously, where you review all the needs, pains, and problems, as well as the urgency, the what's in it for me's, and the benefits you previously uncovered, and remind her of her concrete step, too. The third thing you need to do is call and leave a voicemail prior to the meeting with that same information on it. That is, you don't say, "Hi, this is Jeff, and I'm calling from our meeting Thursday at 10. You say, "Hi, this is Jeff, and I was calling to confirm our meeting Thursday at 10. As you may remember, we had talked about some of your concerns with regard to the quality and quantity of leads you're getting from your marketing program, the conversion rate and the close rate, and you wanted to hear how we can help you grow your revenues, your market share, and your profitability, maybe even do it within the quarter." Notice that I didn't talk about our solution. I reminded her of the pain points she revealed and the benefits she wanted, and even alluded to an urgency factor. Now let me ask you, which is she more likely to remember? That she has an appointment to hear about your lame product or service, or an opportunity to solve a problem that she has to deal with every single day? What call is she more likely to attend? A call about something that's going to cost her money, or a call about something that's going to make her money? Another of the major concerns that callers have is with getting past gatekeepers. Receptionists who won't give you a name, secretaries who won't put you through, even a manager who won't let you talk to their boss. They all seem like roadblocks on your road to success. But here's a thought to consider. What if you viewed gatekeepers, whether they're the typical receptionist, the mid-level manager, an executive secretary, or the owner's spouse, just like any other decision maker? Wouldn't the technique that you just learned work just as well? Don't they have needs and problems just like everyone else? Perhaps their need is to protect their boss's time, but what if their problem was also to help their boss succeed? Don't they have goals and objectives just like everyone else? What would it mean if they were responsible for introducing a solution that increased the company's profitability by 50%? What would it mean to them if they made their boss into a hero? Don't they have a boss just like everyone else? How do you think their boss would react if they found out that they blocked a solution to a major problem? And therefore, couldn't you persuade them to do what you want them to do, such as put you through to their boss, track her down, or help you find other decision makers using the exact same techniques we've been discussing here? Of course you could. You just learned how to persuade a busy executive to give you 15 minutes of her time at $500 an hour. How hard is it to convince a recent high school graduate that she'd be a hero in her boss's eye if she helped double the sales of the company? In other words, to get past the gatekeeper, you run the exact same call at her or him that you would run at any other decision maker. Because remember, gatekeepers are, by definition, decision makers too. They can make the decision to block you or let you in. It's just a question of how much value you've built with them with your questions as to which they end up doing. If you ever have trouble visualizing how to deal with a gatekeeper, a clever trick is to talk to them as if they are the owner's spouse. Don't they care about about maximizing sales? Don't they care about minimizing costs? Don't they care about quality, safety, profit, keeping or enhancing their position? How about, don't they care about getting promoted, getting recognition, helping their boss succeed, protecting the company? Of course they do. And don't they know all the office scuttlebutt? Don't they know who does what and what the problems are? Then why would you ever try to get around them? Wouldn't it be better to make them an ally in your effort to get the appointment, to use them to help you gather information, and to advocate for your cause? Of course, you have to be careful here because it's easy to get caught up in working through gatekeepers and forget that you want to get to the decision maker. But if you focus your efforts on persuading the gatekeeper to put you through, you'll get through, and you'll get the appointment that you need. If nothing else, getting past gatekeepers is actually great practice for persuading decision makers, because if you can do the former, then the latter should be easy. Another problem that cold callers frequently complain about is voicemail. With this approach, isn't voicemail now your friend? What if you left an IBS on all your calls that go into voicemail like this? Hi, this is Jeff from LeadGen.com. We provide sales training that can enable you to double or triple your sales, add 10 points of market share, unhook your competitors, and become the dominant player in your market. The reason for my call today is to tell you a little bit about what we do, to find out a little bit about what your needs might be in this area, and see if there's a fit and a reason to talk further. If you could give me a call back at, here's my number, I'd look forward to seeing you, how we might be able to help you increase your company's revenue and profitability. Thanks, and I look forward to speaking with you. Isn't that like leaving a free 15-second commercial? Ask yourself, who wouldn't call that back, assuming they cared about sales or profitability? Sure, not everyone will do it, but a whole lot more people will than if you said, "Hi, this is Jeff, please call me back." Anyway, why would you give up such an easy opportunity to brag about your value? You never know who might hear about it. After all, if your IBS is strong enough to get the prospect's initial interest on a phone call where you're talking to her, why wouldn't it do the same thing on a voicemail? Along those lines, couldn't you even leave a question on the recording, such as, "What would it mean to you if I could double your sales? How would it help if we could triple the productivity of your salespeople?" Or, "What would it mean for your company if we could show you a way to get 15% more for your products in the market?" You won't get an answer right away, of course, but what impact would it have on your prospect if you left a message like that? At some point, they'd have to be nuts not to call you back. Either that, or it's on a topic that's more than a few degrees of Kevin Bacon away from their job, and it doesn't matter anyway. But even then, there are going to be more than a few cases where they forward your message to the right person, and now you're in the game. But the question is, do you think you might get some callbacks? Of course you would. To finish up, we need to talk about one of the most egregious errors that cold callers make on the phones: touching base. That is, if there's anything that prospects find to be more annoying than when a caller calls or a salesperson calls them up and the excuse for the call is for them to touch base, we haven't seen it. It is at best irrelevant to anything of interest to the prospect, if not verbally offensive. It is nagging and patronizing, and it shows a complete lack of forethought or respect for the prospect. So you shouldn't do it, say it, or even think it. On the other hand, following up is a perfectly legitimate activity you may have to do after you've had a good but unfortunately incomplete venture through the call flow with the prospect, assuming you didn't get the appointment the first time. Consequently, it assumes that you've been working your way through the call flow diagram over what has turned out to be now a multi-call effort, uncovering needs and problems, their consequences and costs, and how they add up over time, identifying stakeholders and creating the perception of value to both the prospect and the beneficiaries of her work. If you haven't been doing that, then we can't help you. There is simply nothing to follow up on. But if you have, then the solution for bridging the time gap and reinvigorating the call should be obvious. The reason for my call is to follow up on how we can help your salespeople generate more appointments and close more new sales faster and with less time, effort, and aggravation. Do you have a moment to talk? This lets you pick up where you left off, and you're on your way. And in case it's not vividly obvious, this also works if the person isn't there and you have to leave a message on their voicemail. Simply repeat the problems and benefits you've already uncovered and ask to continue the conversation. Clearly, we've covered way too much material here to summarize it all, so we're just going to highlight a few slides that you need to remember and focus on. The first is the high-level view of the cold call. Remember what's going on in your prospect's mind before they pick up the phone. Write your prerequisites so you have a good story to tell, and make sure you have good infrastructure for calling. Plan your questions using the call flow diagram, and keep good notes using your cold calling worksheet. When you're making your calls, have a copy of the call flow diagram with your customized questions added in front of you. Refer to it so that you know we've covered all the questions and issues you need to cover as you build your business case for meeting. Remember that telling ain't selling, and that if you want to persuade someone to do something, leading them to the conclusion that you want them to reach by asking them good questions is a lot easier than beating them into it with declarative statements. Remember why you're asking these questions: to find reasons to meet that outweigh the prospect's natural inclination not to meet, knowing that those reasons to meet are all in the prospect's head, and you have to just get them out by asking good questions. Remember, what ultimately drives a prospect to want to meet or to do anything is their desire to close the gap between where they are and where they want to be. So a big part of your job is to find a gap you can close with your products or services. Remember that, unfortunately, sometimes those gaps can be a little complicated, but that's your problem, not theirs. You need to understand their problems the way they see them in order to position your product as the solution. But just ask the right questions, and the information will be forthcoming. Take good notes on your cold call worksheet, and you'll turn over a great sales lead. Other than that, have fun, uncover needs, bring value, and make a ton of money.